towards the end of the hour of cartoons, Porky Pig came across the scene, and Mel Blanc's voice then said those timeless words, "That's all, folks," meaning your hour of cartoons are over. And Porky Pig, I'm not going to try to mimic Mel Blanc, had that kind of funny way of ending, "That's all, folks." I was thinking about that sort of mantra in consideration of today, our text, Trinity Sunday, but more particularly, what's going on in our society. Seems to me that more and more people see that as their mantra. They wake up in the morning, they might be trying their best to have a life of meaning and purpose, and yet many people in our world now finish their day, their week, their month by declaring, "That's all, folks." Their vocational life has maybe gone south, their marriage might be dry and mundane, their children didn't grow up the way they expected, their hopes have been dashed at their feet in some way. They've been diminished by something, by forces, by their own choices. And there's a lot of people in our world who find that as their life's mantra. "That's all, folks," with a big old period at the end. Well, the disciples actually had that as their mantra. Going forward towards Jesus' last week, they then watched him on Good Friday receive the brutality of a Roman cross, murdered, and then they had no sense of hope beyond that loss. Some of them went back to fishing. Judas killed himself. They all ran. There was a time when the disciples had that as their mantra. "That's all, folks," just a big old period. Their rabbi, their teacher, their friend, their beloved community leader then was killed, murdered. And they saw, "That's the end of my life. That's the end of my journey. I gave myself over to this cause, and this is how it's ended." Even in today's gospel text, which is full of hope, it says, "And some doubted." There were still some people who were wondering among the community about their ending. Then something started to happen, though, about "That's all, folks." And that is, Jesus started showing up alive. First to Mary Magdalene outside the tomb. You'll remember she thought he was the gardener. Then to James and John, Peter, and a few others. He met up with two forlorn disciples on the way to Emmaus. They recognized him in the breaking of the bread. Then later that day, he appears to them in the upper room. He meets up with Thomas. He then has a breakfast by the beach at the Sea of Galilee. And then today's gospel text appointed for Trinity Sunday, the Great Commission, when he meets up with them again in the upper room, and we hear, "And some doubted." But during those Easter appearances, something began to happen. The period at the end of "That's all, folks," then was taken away. You might say that the period became a comma. That Easter was a comma, more life, more hope, a greater sense of purpose. Reynolds Price is one of my favorite authors. And when Reynolds Price had cancer and looked like he was not only sick, but really on his way to dying, he began to reflect about his own pilgrimage during those months of illness and treatments and pain. He discovered that most of his days were full of what he called complaining of "why me?" That's the question that he was asking every day. Why me? Why now? Why this time? And over, his mantra was basically, "That's all, folks," with a big old period at the end. But then he began to discover a change that came over him, almost like the disciples did, that the period was beginning to be a comma. And he began to ask another question, a different question, a life-giving question, even as he was sick and dying. His question changed from "why me," he declared in his memoirs, to "what's next?" Not "why me," but "what's next?" That seems to be where the disciples were going in Easter. The comma then changed their question from "why us?" to "what's next?" It's a life-giving question. It's an Easter question. It's a question with a comma. More life, more hope, more opportunities. What was the "what's next" in that text from Matthew 28, which we call the Great Commission? Jesus seems to be giving them two "what's nexts." One of them, he says, "I want you to remember. I want you to remember, and I want you to serve." First, remember. He says, remember. He said it quite often. "Do this in remembrance of me. Remember now, I want you to teach them all that I've commanded you." What was his last commandment? It was on Maundy Thursday when he washed their feet. "I want you to love one another. I want you to love your neighbor. I want you to love the stranger. I want you to love one another as I am loving you." How is he loving them? By washing their feet, for heaven's sake. He wants us to remember all the ways that God has been giving us grace over our life's pilgrimage. "I want you to remember all that I've taught you. I want you to remember all that I've instilled in you." Maybe for some of us, all the way back to Sunday school, all the way up to the current, present, and on into the future. "I want you to remember everything that God's grace has done for you. Don't forget." And yet, we do forget at our detriment. When I was in high school, I was in a rock and roll band. I know when you look at this person and you think of rock and roll band, those two do not go together, and you would be absolutely right. The band didn't last very long. I was rhythm guitar with my little Fender electric guitar. It was called Speed Limit 35, the name of the band. So it wasn't particularly wild in its nature. We played things like "The Little Black Egg" by the and "Wild Thing" by the Troggs, "Turn, Turn, Turn" by the Byrds. What I remember about my rock and roll band Speed Limit 35 is that we didn't remember. When we played dance events, we could not remember the lyrics. It's pretty important to remember the lyrics if you want some people to dance to your music. But we would sort of forget, and we'd sort of mumble our way through the lyrics. It's no surprise that the band didn't last very long. We forget at our detriment. Jesus wants us to remember the lyrics. What were the lyrics? "I want you to love one another as I have loved you." That's the lyric. "Do this in remembrance of me." That's the lyric. "Go beyond your comfort zone and serve the one who's lost and least and last in our world." That's the lyrics. "I want you to remember," Jesus said, but we forget at our detriment. You may know the story of the two elderly couples who were having a dinner together, and they had finished dinner, and the ladies had adjourned to go into the kitchen to do some cleanup, and the two guys were still at the table, and one elderly gentleman said to the other, "You know, we went to this fabulous restaurant last week, and I commend it to you." The other one said, "Well, what's the name of it?" Pause, and he's tapping his feet. Pause, and he said to his buddy, "What's the name of that flower that people give to each other when they have a special occasion? You know, it's red, and it has thorns." He said, "You mean a rose?" He said, "That's it." He looked towards the kitchen. He said, "Hey, Rose, what's the name of that restaurant where we went last week?" We forget at our detriment. Jesus wants us to remember. Remember now, he says, I will be with you to the end of the age. Secondly, he wants us to serve, baptize, make disciples, reach out to the stranger, reach out to the one who is most in need in our society. It's life-giving. It asks us, what's next? It's a comma, not a period at the end of that's all, folks. The comma, the what's next, leads us into mission of reaching out, using our strengths, our skills, for the sake and the welfare of the neighbor. A number of months ago, I was traveling, and I was in one of those large urban airports where you have to take a tram, a bus tram, out to the terminal. Those are fun, aren't they? Where you don't just walk to the terminal, you have to take a bus tram. Well, this tram was packed full of people and luggage, people everywhere. There was one little seat, thin seat for this piece right here. So I'm wiggling my way into my little thin seat, putting my luggage down. And there was a young man on one side and an elderly woman on the other. And as I was squeezing myself into this, I noticed that the young man, it wasn't that I just touched cloth when our legs touched. I heard a thump. And I kind of glanced at him, and he kind of glanced over, and he recognized that I heard the thump. And he said to me quietly, yes, it's a prosthesis. I lost my leg in Afghanistan. He then offered that he was a small college All-American tennis player at William and Mary. He said, before I became a pro, I wanted to serve our country, so I signed up for the Army. I went with my platoon, was expecting that this would be great service, and it was, he said, but I lost my leg in the process. And then he paused and said, and I lost my life. He could have said, that's all, folks, big old period at the end of his sentence. He said, I didn't have any hope at all for a long time. He said, I was totally lost. The only thing I knew up to that point was that I was going to be a professional tennis player. And that was gone. Everything seemed to be gone, he whispered to me. Then he said, but then something happened. I was invited by a neighbor to go to what he called Second Chance Church. I have no idea what that church looked like, but that's how he described it. He said, I went and I began to meet up with people who were living a second chance. And I heard about grace. And I heard about the fact that my life wasn't over. I heard about, he could have said, Easter. He said, it's from those experiences that I decided that my life wasn't over. He could have said, and there became a comma. And not a big old period. He began to ask, what's next? I asked him, what is your what's next? He said, I just started a summer tennis camp for disabled children. He said, there's children who have no arms or hands or feet or legs. There are people who have crutches and they have metal around their limbs. Some cannot see. He said, I have all kinds of kids who come to my summer tennis camp. And we come out in the morning and we are a cadre of different kinds of forms and abilities and inabilities. He said, we put on our tennis shoes if we have feet, and we hold our racket if we have a hand, and we do our very best to play the very best tennis we can. During the day, he said, but what's important is at the end of each day, when those children's head hits their pillow at my summer camp, he's saying now this to me on the tram. He said, they know they're loved. I thought when I got on the plane, what a gift that I've been given. This young man is talking about what's next. He's talking about Easter. He's talking about these disciples who are gathering with Jesus when he says, "All authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Now go, therefore, and make disciples, baptizing in the name of the Trinity and teaching them all that I have commanded you," which is the last commandment, love one another as I have loved you. And remember, I will be with you until the close of the age. Could it be that this summer is a what's next for you? That in some way you're going to replace a period and put a comma in. And instead of asking, why me, you're going to ask, what's next? Therefore go. Make disciples, baptize, serve, love one another as I have loved you, remembering that the God of the created order, who we call Father, made all this for us, and we're to tend to it. And God the Son, Jesus of Nazareth, redeemed this whole thing, and then it's sustained by what we call the Holy Spirit. And in all those ways, you and I have the outstanding privilege of changing a period into a comma and asking, what's next?